Hey folks, I want to remind you that the Turning Point Action People's Conference is coming up this June 14th to 16th in Detroit, Michigan. Get your tickets and then go to unhumansbook.com to come to a special meet and greet for the launch party of the Unhumans book with myself and Joshua Lysak. I'll see you there in Detroit.
This is what happens when the fourth turning meets fifth generation warfare.
A commentator, international social media sensation, and former Navy intelligence veteran.
This is Human Events with your host, Jack Posobiec.
Deliver us from evil.
UCLA was one of the latest flashpoints between pro-Palestinian and pro-Israeli demonstrators. Dozens clashed Sunday after a security barrier was breached. Physical altercations took place. Following the skirmishes, UCLA officials moved to drastically reinforce the barricades and railings. Across the country, authorities detained 100 people at Northeastern University in Boston. Pro-Palestinian student demonstrators are calling for their schools to divest from companies that do business with Israel.
The criminal case against Donald Trump for trying to reverse the last election on the rocks. The government aiming to show Mr. Trump cannot be immune from federal charges for his actions leading up to January 6th, simply because he was still president at the time. The conservative justices skeptical presidents don't need some protection.
The president's 2025 budget proposal plans to raise the capital gains tax rate to 44.6%. Big sigh from Grover. That's the highest rate since its creation. In 1922.
That higher capital gains tax, China's at 20%. He wants America at 44.6%.
Americans don't assess the economy through the economic indicators and data that we all report on constantly. They assess it through how they feel about it. 34% currently approve of Biden's handling of the economy, so significantly lower than his overall job approval, 66%. Disapprove.
Donald Trump is spending hours each day in a New York courtroom in his criminal hush money trial. But on the campaign trail, a brand new CNN poll out this morning shows Trump sustaining his lead over President Biden among registered voters, 49% to 43%, with more saying they considered Trump's presidency a success than Biden's.
Biden's folks don't want him to debate. They don't want to give Trump that platform and risk exposing Biden like that on national TV.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome aboard today's edition of Human Events Daily. We are live from Madrid, Spain today. We've got a little bit going on over here. I'll tell you about that later in the week. Today is April 29th, 2024, Anno Domini. I want to talk to you about what's going on today. What we're currently facing is the operational election, the operational election. CNN had a big freak out over the weekend because Donald Trump bested Joe Biden in their national head-to-head poll. He also bested Joe Biden when they added in third parties. In fact, when they added in third parties, Trump actually went up almost 9 points higher. Then if you go to RCP, the Real Clear Politics swing state average has Trump up in every single swing state, including 4.8% in Nevada. The state of Nevada, which Donald Trump has never actually won, a state that Republicans get close to winning very often, but don't ever seem to take home. He's up 4.8%, almost 5 points there. The problem is, do the polls matter? Do the issues matter? This is a beyond politics election. I said this morning on War Room. What does that mean? Beyond politics means we are in an operational election. This election will not be won on the issues. It will, but in a different way. This isn't an election about just beating your opponent on the issues. This is an election about driving your voters out to the polls. And more so than driving them out, it's actually getting them out to vote in terms of early voting and ballots. Currently, we are not seeing the Trump campaign and the RNC fielding offices in the swing states, in the battleground states. Understand, Donald Trump has been forced off of the campaign trail by state force. They have removed him from the ability to be barnstorming the nation. That's why he wasn't in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania last week on Election Day. That's why he can't be there. So there's two pieces to this. There's two pieces. Number one, that's why you need to make a plan and make sure at least three of your friends and family need to make a plan to be voting early, because you never know where it could be on election day. Who knows? Like Donald Trump, you could be in court. Or the second piece of this is that it is incumbent, while Donald Trump is on court, they must have these field offices up and running and this early get out the vote, get out the early vote campaign up in every single one of these battleground states. The Democrats already have. They're out banking votes. Joe Biden is desperate. That's why you're seeing him throw out all of these, it's not red meat, it's blue meat. The capital gains, 44%, the Title IX junk. That's why he's going to the far left. But at the end of the day, folks, if we don't have those field offices and this ground game, lose. It's incumbent upon us to begin the operations, not in June, but right now. Right now. Or everything that we are fighting for goes down the drain. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Ladies and gentlemen, one of the best ways that you can support us here at Human Events and the work that we do is subscribing to us on our Rumble channel. Make sure you're subscribed. You hit the notifications so you'll never miss a clip. You'll never miss a new live episode. And we're putting them out every single day of the week.
But I got a hankering, a yearning deep inside. For this book called Unhumans, I just can't hide.
All right, Jack Posobiec back here, live Madrid, Spain. A couple of questions for you, folks. How do you survive a communist apocalypse? Well, you watch Human Events daily every day. Check. Follow Poso on X. Check. Pre-order Unhumans on Amazon and at unhumansbook.com. Check. There's one more thing that you're forgetting, and it could make the biggest difference in your future and your family's financial future, and that's checking out today's episode sponsor, Allegiance Gold. Since 2020, Bidenomics has been obliterating the American economy. Imagine what four more years will do to interest rates, debt, and labor disputes. You need something stable so that you can take a breath and know that the money you earned and the retirement you worked for is safe. You have to proactively protect your assets so that when the supply chain gets rocked and Biden decides to print a few trillion more dollar bills, it won't impact your family's bottom line. And the only way to do that is with the one true beacon of stability that so many patriots use to preserve their wealth, and that, my friends, is gold. Over the last 5 years, it's almost doubled in value. With the way that things are looking, the sky is the limit. Allegiance Gold has done the thing the right way from the beginning, so there's no coincidence that they're earned the best and highest trust ratings in the precious metals industry, 5 stars with TrustLink and an A+ with a Better Business Bureau. Allegiance Gold can help protect your IRA or 401k with physical gold or silver, and you can have it delivered securely to your doorstep. Get up to $5,000 in free silver on a qualifying investment when you go to protectwithposo.com or call 844-577-POSO. Don't risk your financial future betting against these forces. Act today. Protectwithposo.com. That's protectwithposo.com or call 844-577-POSO. Folks, it's simple. It's very simple. Complacency right now is the enemy. Complacency will lead to the demise of the republic. Where are the offices? Where are the offices in these swing states and battleground states? That's the bottom question that you need to be asking, the bottom line up front. Don't come to me and ask about this issue, this thing, that thing. No. Where are the offices? Where are the operations? Where's the ground game? People come and say, oh, what about this? What about that? Biden said that. No. I don't want to hear the day-to-day outrage. I want to hear where are the operations. And that's why today we're bringing on somebody who directly focuses on operations, not just inside the United States, where he does do a lot of fighting, but also outside the United States. Now, of course, I myself am in Madrid, Spain. My guest is coming to us from Paris, France, right next door to myself here. And his name is Mark Evagno. He is the executive director of Republicans for National Renewal. But of course, he hails originally from the proud and great state of Texas. Mark, how are you?
Hey, Jack, doing well. I appreciate the nice introduction.
So I had this statement in my speech. So you and I just did CPAC Hungary, And then we went over and did Make Europe Great Again, the mega conference in Romania. You're in France. I'm over in Madrid working with some of the local right wing parties here. And so what I said in both of those speeches is, in order to properly fight globalism, because it is a global system, the irony is that we need to build an international alliance of anti-globalists. And that's what we've become, an international alliance of anti-globalists. And so what do you say to folks when they sort of say, wait a minute, if we're fighting for, you know, America first, then why is it that you're gallivanting around Europe?
Right. Well, Jack, it was quite the honor, as I'm sure you'd agree, that we were in Budapest, Hungary, meeting with Prime Minister Viktor Orban, who really is kind of made that country, Hungary, a beacon of hope for national populists or true conservatives, whatever you want to call them. I know there's different terms used in different countries. But as far as this issue where, oh, you're America first, but you're also gallivanting in different countries and talking to foreign leaders, well, people who are aware of the issues, they know that the left is not just the left of the United States. It's the global left. They have a lot of resources. They have a lot of power. They have a lot of influence. They've been networking for many years, well before conservatives have been getting together. And the one thing they don't have is the support of the people of every respective country. And so they have to rely on pouring in millions of dollars into propaganda campaigns or just using their influence. But conservatives, we've been fractioned, right? We even here in Europe, I'm sure you talk to some people, they'll say, well, this other country, even though they have a conservative leader, we have a bad history with them. And so we can't really work with them. Or, you know, 50 years ago, they did something that we didn't like. And so now we can't work with them. And maybe that's a legitimate concern and a legitimate reason to not want to work with somebody. But when the stakes are so high, where you're fighting against this globalist tyranny, you have to work together. And so we're not for globalism, but we are for global cooperation, uniting with our allies who are ideologically aligned with us. And frankly, you're fighting a lot of the same issues. I know we've brought over some members of the European Parliament to some of our events with Republicans for National Renewal and had panels, and they'll explain to the audience, our American audience, what kind of issues they're facing in their country. So they're being told things like, well, you're from Sweden, but you have no culture. You should be happy to welcome people from Afghanistan or Africa, the Middle East in general. And, you know, forget your culture and history. You don't really have one. Right. Right. So
but there's no culture.
Right. Our American audience, their jaws drop and they say, wow, that's insane to hear that, especially from a European country like Sweden. Feminism is pushed very hard there, too. And so I think once Americans also realize that we're not just an island upon ourselves fighting one enemy, we're fighting the same enemy as the Europeans and across the world, frankly. So definitely, if we're going to actually launch an offensive against the left, we have to cooperate. Otherwise, we'll continue to be on the defensive and stepping back instead of stepping forward.
Couldn't agree more. And in fact, so you and I actually had the opportunity, along with our colleague Gavin Wax, to speak directly to Prime Minister Orban there at that off the record. Since it was off the record, we don't really need to talk about everything that we said. Though I will say that from a lot of people in the European sphere, particularly Viktor Orban, who's been so successful, he's given us a way to show us the playbook of how to fight the left and win. People don't always put it together, right? Hungary is the country that George Soros originated from. How did Viktor Orban originally become so popular and so strong in Hungary? He ran George Soros and his operations out of the country, and he did so without remorse. He did so without apologizing to the left. He destroyed left. This is the guy who beat Soros in his home country, and they were sort of both vying for power in Hungary, and Orban was able to rally the people to his side and get Soros out of there. So this guy's already beaten Soros once. Why would you not want to talk to a guy who's already done that? Number two, he also showed us the way to reorient nationalist populism so that it's not necessarily something where people will say, oh, you're just anti-immigrant, you're anti-welcoming. And what Orban did, I think, that was so smart and continues to do, was to reorient the entire framework of speaking around the idea of family. around the idea of we support our families. Now, that means, of course, on a direct level, on the surface level, saying we are going to support people having more families, using economic incentives for this, but then also that you defend your country the way you would defend your family. And so the leader becomes the defender of the country because they're defending their family the same way I would do anything to defend my family. I would defend my family up to and including my own life. There's no question about what I would do to defend my family because I love my family. And so this is a complete spin on the way the conservatives, I think, have interacted with voters in the past. And you know, Tanya Tay was actually had a tweet that went pretty viral because every time we go to Budapest, you walk around, there's playgrounds everywhere. There's free strollers in the airport. There's incentives. It is just a family friendly and specifically child friendly city. And so when people go and try to paint him as this, like, you know, autocratic tyrant, you go to Budapest and you see families walking around with like 5-6 kids and they're all going to the playground. You're like, wait, this is what a, you know, a tyrannical autocracy is like. It seems kind of nice.
Yeah, that's right. So it's very interesting to me whenever, you know, I'm sure your audience has heard the argument we have with the communist types. We ask them, where has communism ever been implemented and been successful? And of course, you get a bunch of hem and ha, and real communism has never been implemented. They just messed up in all these other countries where communism brought all kinds of destruction and ruin. It just hasn't really been implemented properly. But one question we never get is, well, where has national populism been implemented and been successful? Well, I think we both know why. Because there's several examples of that, and I think Hungary is probably one of the best examples. Like you said, you go there, and it's a beautiful, beautiful country to go to. And even their capital city, and all across the West, most capital cities are dirty, high crime, very multicultural societies. You barely see any of the natives around there. Hungary is a very nice exception, where you have actual Hungarians living there. You have their culture preserved. And again, it's safe, whether you're walking around at 2 in the morning, 10 in the morning, it doesn't matter. It's just a safe, clean place to be, and that's their capital city.
I wasn't walking around at 2 and 3 in the morning. What were you up to at 2 in the morning walking around Budapest, going around with Gavin Wax?
Maybe we don't need to talk about that. Not that I was, but if anyone were to ask me, I plead the fifth. But either way, I've been told, and so I've heard, that it's a very safe place to walk around at any time of the day or night.
Let's just say that Gavin and his friends had conducted a few extracurricular activities in the evenings, and they had a great time in Budapest. I was in I'm not going to say I was there myself because I was hanging out with the lovely and beautiful Tanya Tay, who's just sitting over there. But I was in group chat and I got to see some videos. We got a quick break coming out here, and look, folks, that's what it's all about: the Orbans, the Milays, the Bukeles. This is how you take your country back. You make it safe. You make it fun. You make it a great place to live. That's why people want to go there. We'll be right back.
The hidden tales of the communist history. I want to know the truth, what really went down. So I'm jumping on my computer.
All right, Jack Posobiec back live, Human Events Daily, Madrid, Spain, here with the lovely and beautiful, talented Tanya Tay, meeting some brave and strong Spanish patriots and talking about the way forward. Folks, I got to tell you real quick, the world is in flames and Bidenomics is a complete and total disaster, but it cannot, will not ruin my day. Do you know why? It's because I start my day with a hot America First cup of blackout coffee. Yes, even here in Spain, we brought the blackout coffee with us. Tanya Tay's making it. We use the little, like the deal they've got in the hotels. Doesn't matter where we are. I need my blackout coffee, and so do you, because blackout coffee is 100% committed to conservative values, from sourcing the beans to the roasting process, customer support, and shipping. They embody true American values and accept no compromise on taste or quality. look, I love this stuff. We're loving it even here in Spain. So you guys will be able to power yourself, power your family, power your business. Blackoutcoffee.com/Poso, promo code POSO20 for 20% off your first order. We know Mother's Day is coming up next month. It's never too soon to give mom and those close to your heart the gift of being awake, not woke, with Blackout Coffee. That's blackoutcoffee.com/POSO, blackoutcoffee.com/POSO, promo code POSO20. So, Mark, I've got an interesting story slash question. We're speaking with Mark Evagno from the Republicans for National Renewal. He is the executive director, and he and I have both conducted these conferences here in over in Budapest as well as in Bucharest, so Hungary and Romania. And, Mark, really interesting is because people kept asking me, no one asked me, can Trump beat Biden, right? That's normally the question you would get in an election season when you're overseas or talking to someone overseas. Can Trump beat Biden? That's not what they said. Especially in Romania, people kept asking me, are they going to let Trump back in office? And my response to them was like, hey, guys, you know better than me what's going on because you lived. This was under the Iron Curtain, and the Romanians were under the Iron Curtain. The Hungarians were under the Iron Curtain. And guess what? They didn't just ask for their freedom back, didn't ask for their country back. They took it back. The Romanians rose up and fought off the communists and took their country back. We don't have to talk about what happened to Ceausescu and his wife. And then you've got also in Hungary where they launched multiple uprisings that failed and were, you know, covered under martial law, even under the communists. But again, they didn't give up faith. They never stopped fighting. So, you know, why is it, though, that even overseas, even abroad, in places that were under the Iron Curtain, behind the Iron Curtain, why are they asking me, will Trump be allowed to win the election?
You know, I got a lot of those similar questions. And I would tell them, you know, we all know President Trump has already won twice. We think he'll win a third time as well. And the response would be a little chuckle. And then, yes, we know. But will he be allowed to be elected? And I said, well, that's the question, right? Can we defeat the margin of voter fraud? And that's why I've called. I was on a panel in CPAC Hungary, and I called for essentially using the state's rules. If you're in a state where you're allowed to ballot harvest, go do it. Go to the local church. Go anywhere where you think conservatives might be and do some ballot harvesting. I even mentioned Scott Pressler and what he's campaigning for, and I think it's a great idea. I mean, if we just go out and campaign the traditional way, we go out, give nice speeches, we shake hands, we kiss babies. Meanwhile, the Democrats are in their basement doing nothing, but they have their cronies out there ballot harvesting, and they come in at 3 a.m. with a box full of a few thousand ballots, and all of a sudden they won the election by a slight margin. And that's ridiculous. We can't allow that to continue to happen. And so Republicans need to wake up, have the offices in different states, especially swing states. Where's the RNC on that? You know, we were talking before coming on live, and how can you win? Republicans aren't really trying to win that much as of right now if they're not embracing ballot harvesting and the rules within each state. As corrupt as they might be, and we don't agree with those rules, if that is the rule, we have to play by them.
Look, it's so obvious to me, but my question is, where's the offices? Where are the offices? And I'm just going to keep saying that until we get the offices open. Where are the offices? Where's the ground game? Where's the early get out the vote game? Because it's not even get out the vote anymore, right? It's get out the ballots. So GOTB. Where are the people that are putting this together? We know Turning Point Action already has their plan with Tyler Boyer, and they've got the app up, so go check out Turning Point Action. But of course, Tyler just went and got indicted by the Democrats in Arizona, because people need to understand what's going on is a full spectrum attack on Trump and Trump supporters and key Trump lieutenants in all of these different parts of the country. Why is Trump being forced up? And it blows my mind that people won't simply call it what it is. Trump has been removed from the campaign trail by state force. This has never happened before in the history of the United States that a leading candidate, actually, if we go by the polls, the leading candidate for president has been removed from the campaign trail by state force. We've never seen something like that. If this were happening in Russia, we all know what everybody would say. But Mark, in places like Hungary and Romania, they know exactly what that is, don't they?
Right. So we have the Banana Republic, we have the kangaroo courts, we have the whole circus, it seems. And it's kind of interesting where, You know, I go to countries like Hungary, Romania, even El Salvador, and the election integrity isn't really an issue over there. And you think, well, surely in some of these developing countries, particularly El Salvador, that would be a big issue, but they don't seem to really discuss that much. Meanwhile, we're here in a first world country. It's supposed to be the country of freedom and liberty, and we're dealing with some of the biggest corruption, I think. Really surprising to most Americans, myself included. I always thought this was things that would happen in, you know, some foreign country, some third world somewhere. But then you see it being uncovered, especially in the last 5 years or so, where we have some of the worst corruption that we've ever seen in a first world. And even in any European country, they wouldn't tolerate that. They have to have an ID to vote. They have much more security when it comes to elections. And so people should be questioning, why is it that in our country, supposedly the greatest country in the world, which I agree it is in many aspects, why can we not have election integrity? Well, that's because it would not benefit a certain party, the current ruling party. And I think they'll do everything they can to stop us from having election integrity, whether it is cheating, using violence and intimidation tactics. We saw BLM and Antifa. And say President Trump does get elected this term, which I think he will, despite the cheating and the voter fraud, they're going to want to burn the country down. So they want to make it a lose-lose situation for us, it seems.
So I said this on War Room this morning, and I agree with you completely that what we're seeing happen right now on these campuses isn't actually about Israel or Gaza. What it's about is setting up the operational networks for that havoc and anarchy and destruction that you're speaking of. And what they're doing is it's network development as well as network stress testing. So they're getting their test bed out right now. They're rolling it out. You've got Antifa at these places. You've got you've got far left radicals. And the only piece of it that they left to have is BLM. Once they get BLM on board, there's no question in my mind, cities will burn before Election Day 2024. And we're already seeing the networks being built in real time for this. And you go and they interview the people and you find out that like less than 10% of them are actually students. Fewer than 10% are actually students at these protests. And the rest of it is just committed far leftists, rent-a-mobs, and these same types of networks. But let me ask you this question. Because, look, we can see the left getting their powers ready. They've got their judicial side going. They've got their battleground state offices open. They've already got they're mobilizing their street forces and their street militias. Let me ask you this question, though. Is it time for Republicans to start putting pressure on key leftists with not just the sort of online rhetoric, or should we actually be using things like lawfare against them? Why aren't we seeing subpoenas going out against all of the far left organizations and NGOs? Why aren't we seeing RICO investigations open up? I've been calling for this for months at this point, that the state's attorneys general need to start doing this on left-wing NGOs, whether it's ADL, SPLC, or any organization, Students for Justice for Palestine. Why not? Oh, they're, you know, New York Post, oh, they're funded by George Soros. Great. Open up an investigation. Subpoena the crap out of these guys. Start investigating them from the federal level with the House. And yet Jordan won't do it. What is it about your sort of modern conservative that just is so averse to actually using power?
Right. So I'm an attorney and I understand how lawfare works. And I also understand that a lot of the times it's not necessarily used because you have a claim that's meritorious. A lot of times it's a stall tactic. We've seen it happen. We're just trying to silence people, right? Lauren Witzke, she was sued for defamation, alleged defamation. I represented her in that case here in Houston. Well, not here in Houston, but in Houston. And it seems to me like there's, even if it's just mildly meritorious, or it can be argued that it's mildly meritorious, then it passes muster and it's difficult to get it dismissed. And so the left has been very good about that. And I think they would not be anywhere near as successful as they have been had it not been for lawfare. And so, yes, of course, the right has to embrace that. And we've seen Prime Minister Viktor Orban, you know, I think the left hates him so much and they're so mad at him because he actually operates in a similar way that they do, only he's pushing conservative values, the family, the original family unit, and you know, Christianity. And so they hate him for using some of those tactics against them, legitimate state power. And so, yes, conservatives need to embrace that or just be a dying breed.
Yeah, are you going to be a dying breed? Real quick, we only got about 90 seconds left, and we're going to be doing in the second half, we're going to be talking more about Lawfare. But I wanted to ask you while I have you on as an attorney, what is your sense of Alvin Bragg's theory of the case? I've been reading Jonathan Turley on it, but I want to get your sense of it's a felony to cover up a false business, other felony. I mean, it's like a Rube's Gold machine.
Yeah, as an attorney, I can't make any sense of it, actually. Looking it over, it just seems like he pulled out of thin air.
So it's not just me. Okay.
Some facts. Okay, so, yeah. And then he said, it's a felony, and then just filed it.
Because it blows my mind, and yet he won't actually even say what the supposed crime that's being covered up is. And yet this is the reason that he's forced off. Folks, we want to thank Mark Evagno for being here. Go give him a follow on Twitter and X, Mark Evagno, as well as go and follow and support Republicans for National Renewal. We're fighting the good fight. Right back, Bill Chamberlain.
Never know the truth, what really went down. So I'm jumping on my computer, going to pre-order town. Pre-ordering love, you can't wait to get my hands on that book. Gonna dive into from the Russian Revolution.
All right, Jack Posobiec, we are back live now talking about Lawfare. We're here, Madrid, Spain, but we're also talking about Lawfare. We're talking about ways that the right can fight back. And we're also learning about the ways the left has done this. And our guest now is Will Chamberlain from the Article 3 Project. Will, this is something that it's truly remarkable to me that actually, I told you we were going to start with the Supreme Court, but I lied. So I want to start with Alvin Bragg, because take it all back from a second. That there is the legal case, right, with Alvin Bragg, and yet there's also the effect of the legal case. And the effect of the legal case is that Donald Trump, who is the current president or current leading presidential candidate in the United States, so CNN has the poll, he's number one head on head and number one by a lot. In the three-way split or four-way split when you add in third parties. And yet he's been removed from the campaign trail by Lawfare, removed by state force. Why are the Democrats so good at this, Will?
Well, I mean, first off, they're ruthless, right? Like, we start there. Yes. Democrats are fundamentally ruthless as a political party. And this is something this is not a new phenomenon. Democrats have been ruthless for a very long time. Especially when it comes to the law and the judges and everything else. I mean, I can think of, you know, Miguel Estrada. Let's take that's a really interesting example of, you know, a guy who was totally qualified for the Supreme Court, was nominated for the D.C. Circuit. Democrats knew that he would be an outstanding candidate, knew he was an outstanding judge, knew he met all the qualifications, and ruined him to the point that his wife ultimately committed suicide. By putting him through the worst confirmation hearing we've ever seen. And why? Because they wanted to be the first people to appoint a Latina or a Latino Supreme Court justice. So that's what they do.
It's incredible. So what's interesting to me is that, and I read Jonathan Turley's great piece on the Alvin Bragg's like actual theory of the case, which is something that, you know, it doesn't seem like it gets actual much play in the press or even in the courtroom with Donald Trump right now, because he's got this very and this is where, and I just asked our last guest, Mark, who's an attorney, but it wasn't really the subject. I just asked him what he thought of it, and he said he couldn't even make sense of it. I'm sitting here as a layperson trying to make sense of there's a misdemeanor to cover up a misdemeanor, which they claim, which somehow transforms it into a felony. Even though the law that supposedly was covered up is a federal law, and the federal government doesn't seem to care about any of this, but he's just going to go ahead and prosecute it as if he was law enforcement at the federal level, and yet in the courtroom we're not being told anything about this theory. Instead, we're being told about his, you know, alleged sex life with these models and striptease artists and this catch and kill stuff with David Pecker. But well, what is the actual theory? And have you ever seen anything like this?
Well, I mean, you actually described the theory fairly well. The idea is that he made a false entry in his business records, or had a false entry made relating to a payment that was ultimately routed to David Pecker for the purchase of Stormy Daniels' the rights to Stormy Daniels' story. And the theory is that that's somehow a campaign finance violation, because somehow, even though ultimately it's him donating the money to himself, I mean, that's the bizarre part of this. I don't actually get what the campaign finance violation truly is here. But it's a very, very bizarre theory. And what I think that Alvin Bragg and his team are trying to do is not to persuade the jury that, you know, the elements of a crime have been satisfied and Donald Trump is guilty beyond a reasonable doubt, but rather that Donald Trump is an extremely bad man and therefore the bad man should go to jail. But that's not how our criminal justice system works.
Right. So and unfortunately, with a case like this, you know, I was saying here in some of the conferences I've been at that, you know, there's no way you can have a fair jury in a place where you have a political, massive political figure like this, and the jury pool is like 90% Democrat. I said the only way you could really have a fair trial is if you did, like, I don't know, a third, and third, and maybe have, you know, a third Republican, a third Democrat, and a third independent or something like that. But of course, that's not how we pick juries in the United States, though perhaps something for Congress to think about when it comes to DC juries in the future. But so essentially, it doesn't matter, because they know they've got a bunch of Dems up there. They know they've got a bunch of libs, and they're going to vote again, or they're going to vote guilty for Trump because he's Trump, and that's about it. Unless you get one or two holdouts, which I think is just kind of a Hail Mary at this point. It's kind of ridiculous to even truly consider it. You know, maybe 1% chance that happens, but the effect of it is actually what matters. And the effect of it is that Donald Trump has been pulled off the campaign trail. He's now sitting in court rather than barnstorming Pennsylvania. There's no ground game up. There's no field offices up yet, which there should be, since he's obviously not there. And though I'm very pleased to hear that Governor DeSantis will be either joining Trump or doing some campaigning as well for him on his own. They had a huge meeting in Miami over the week, and so I tweeted about that, but certainly want to mention that while you're here, Will. It's just amazing that the Democrats have been able to pull this off, and it's like our country doesn't even sit up and talk about what's really going on.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I saw this coming, right? Like, this is, I support President Trump now and want to see him elected. But if you're, you know, people will know that I was a DeSantis supporter in the primary. And one of the reasons is I was worried about this problem. I was worried about the lawfare problem. Now, that said, things have gone well on the lawfare front as a general matter for President Trump. And it looks like most of the federal cases aren't going to see trial before the election. But this one has, for example. And, you know, this is an example of, you know, the kind of the stuff he was going to face as a presidential candidate when we knew about this during the nominating process. But now that it's happening, we got to fight it. And I'm glad, very, very glad to see that Governor DeSantis and President Trump are going to start working together, because I think that, you know, there was some sniping going on from both camps, if you will. And I didn't think any of it was productive. And I think, you know, DeSantis has a lot of support in the country. Donald Trump certainly does. And we should all be working together to defeat Joe Biden.
There's no question. And actually, funny enough, Governor DeSantis also has a history as a Navy lawyer. So, you know, maybe he can offer some legal assistance as well there. But Will, you know, in the 3 minutes we have left in this segment, because I want to do Supreme Court in the next. Have you ever seen a case brought against such a high profile figure like President Trump, or just anyone that's similar to this theory, this bizarre legal theory that Alvin Bragg is using?
Not in particular, nothing similar to this theory. I mean, but we have had similar attempts at lawfare against popular Republicans before. Sure. A good example would be Ted Stevens back in Alaska. They accused him of this bogus bribery charge and suborned perjury from FBI agents to do it. Ted Stevens had to withdraw and he lost his race, which was ultimately what got Obamacare passed. And then after he was convicted at trial, Judge Emmett Sullivan actually threw out the jury verdict and had ethics. I think ultimately some of the prosecutors got indicted and charged themselves and lost their bar licenses.
I wish that Judge Sullivan had been had been that same Judge Sullivan when it came to General Flynn, but apparently not so, as you and I covered his trial together, and or his hearing at least at one point, remember. And remember, Sullivan wouldn't even let Flynn take, or wouldn't even drop the charges. They actually had to go all the way up to the point where Trump pardoned him in like the last, kind of waning minutes of the presidency in 2020 as he was leaving, because Sullivan was just so completely intransigent on this. And it what strikes me, though, and I'll toss it to you for the last minute, is that Democrats will be as ruthless as possible with lawfare, and Republicans seem to just kind of be totally averse to opening up any significant investigations into Democrats.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like we've unilaterally disarmed. I mean, I don't know what's going on in Georgia with Chris Carr and Brian Kemp, but there should have been indictment of Fannie Willis yesterday, months ago. She perjured herself on the stand in front of the whole country. Where's the indictment? It's embarrassing. It's embarrassing to your entire state that you haven't solved the puzzle of how to indict someone who perjured themselves so brazenly. We've unilaterally disarmed in a lot of ways on lawfare, and I think a big part of why the Article III Project exists and what we're going to do going forward, we're going to try and fix that. Lawfare can't just be a one-way street.
Okay. Let's chat about that a little bit more in the next segment. Will Chamberlain, Article III Project, Senior Counsel, works with Mike Davis over there.
But I got a hankering, a yearning deep inside, for this book called Unhumans I just can't hide.
All right, Jack Pasovic back here live, Madrid, Spain, palatial Madrid, Spain. But we're talking to Will Chamberlain about the lawfare that Donald Trump is facing in the United States. Will, real quick, because I have a couple things I want to ask you, but you heard the oral arguments, Supreme Court, this presidential immunity case as it came through. What are your takeaways on that? We had Mike Davis on a couple of times, your colleague, but I wanted to get yours as well.
Yeah, I think that it's a big faceplant for all the lefty legal eagles who said that this was a ridiculous argument and that it had no chance of getting any support on the Supreme Court. I think Donald Trump should be pretty reassured that he will win some amount of immunity, that there is some amount of immunity from prosecution. And it's just a question of where they're going to draw the line. But if they articulate that there's any amount of presidential immunity, then this can't just go straight to trial. There has to be an evidentiary hearing on whether or not President Trump's acts as alleged in the indictment are the official acts or not. So I think President Trump's in good shape. The funny thing is, it's just a way you continually find yourself disappointed or, laughing at so many of these lefty legal analysts, even guys who are like my former professors at Georgetown, who just make complete fools of themselves on national television saying that none of these arguments have any merit. And I mean, I do the reading. I read the Nixon v. Fitzgerald case, which is the case where the Supreme Court found that there was immunity from civil lawsuits for former presidents for their official acts. And you can't read that case and read the logic in it and how it talks about how important the president is to the functioning of our government and how putting any damper on presidential action is both very, very destructive as a policy matter, but also as a legal matter, just, doesn't jive with the general respect that the Constitution shows the president and the respect between the branches. And so it should have been obvious to most of these people that President Trump had and his team had a point on criminal immunity. And yet they just pretended that it was a frivolous, ridiculous argument. Well, apparently not. Apparently five justices of the Supreme Court are going to disagree.
Well, and this is why we have a president vice a prime minister, right? This is why, I mean, the founders could have made the United States have something similar to a prime minister or, just have a, sort of bicameral legislature and leave it at that. But the entire reason, the entire argument for him is just, I'll show you, people could read the Federalist Papers and find this out. The reason for the creation of the presidency was to have someone whose job it was in the government to sort of make these broad sweeping moves and certainly be able to respond in ways at times where a deliberative body would be much slower. And so, obviously part and parcel of that is being able to make those moves without, you know, without having to worry about being sued or indicted every 5 seconds for one of these official acts.
Yeah, energy in the executive. It appears all over the Federalist Papers. It's Hamilton's big idea, the idea that you need energy and efficiency and dispatch in the executive, that the people in whose job it is to enforce and execute the laws, the people whose job it is to handle our foreign relations, are able to act. And that's part of the genius of our government. This isn't, I mean, if we wanted a world where, you know, presidents could just be thrown out willy-nilly, I mean, we had something similar to that world in the Articles of Confederation, but that got tossed because it didn't work. Our Constitution, I think, and sometimes the right forgets this because, you know, we have this kind of libertarian impulse, but the Constitution exists to actually create a part of our government that, while limited and cabined in some ways, is strong and efficient and can do things. And that's the role of the executive branch. And the whole theory, the theory here that there's no criminal immunity, I mean, that's not something the founders would have looked at as being intelligent.
Right, which is why, and by the way, the answer to the limits of the presidency is also there in the Constitution. It's called the impeachment clause. It's right there. And so it's clearly something that the founders envisioned having come up. And they said, of course, this is what we call checks and balances. That is the check on the president's power. And this is the balance of power shared within the other branches. He can be impeached. He can be thrown out. But there is a very high bar to it, as there should be. And so the idea of these sort of backdoor impeachments, I think, would be anathema to the founders, because that's why they made the impeachment process. If you believe it, impeach him. But, you know, kind of switching gears, you mentioned about the Article 3 project, and I wasn't going to leave that on the table as a saved round, that the Article 3 project is potentially looking at some more projects regarding going after the left. Anything you can reveal with us?
Let's see. There's one thing, obviously, I can't reveal until there's a press release about it. But the general idea is we have in the works ethics complaints against prosecutors and judges who have violated their oaths. And what we're going to start looking at, I think.
You're going to go after prosecutors and judges.
Yes. Right. Both of those, you know, federal prosecutors have ethics requirements and boards of professional responsibility within their own departments that they have to answer to. Judges have codes of judicial ethics that they're bound by, at least below the Supreme Court level. They actually, you know, they are firmly bound by and they have to adhere to. And, you know, Article 3 Project has already filed a number of complaints like this, and we have many more in the works. I mean, we filed complaints against Judge Reggie Walton. We fought, especially for when he went on CNN and started blabbing about President Trump's criminal trial. That was a violation of the Judicial Code of Conduct, which says you should not talk about any ongoing case. Not just in your courtroom, but you should just not be talking about any ongoing case.
It's obviously an ethics violation.
Yeah, very straightforward. And so that it's funny. I mean, there have been these left-wing operations, things like Project 65, which, you know, is this broad-based effort by lefty lawyers to get people who worked on the Trump election integrity disputes back in 2020 to get them all disbarred. That's why Jeff Clark is facing a bar issue in D.C. John Eastman was disbarred in California or had his bar license suspended, I guess would be the right way to frame it. Jenna Ellis was censured in Colorado. So a lot of, I mean, basically the left has this nationwide effort to try and go after Trump for legal advice. It's like, I'm a big believer, you know, we haven't really formalized this yet, but I'm a big believer that the right needs to not unilaterally disarm. You know, there was a major conspiracy, for example, in Colorado to keep President Trump off the ballot. And a lot of the lawyers who put forward these frivolous arguments to try and do that, we've seen that, making aggressive arguments is no longer safe. So you should expect to face bar complaints.
I think if you want to go after Jenna Griswold, I can get you some money from Mike Lindell. That guy is not a fan of hers. We're just about out of time. People need to go and check out the Article 3 Project. Go support them. They're ongoing projects. Will, by the way, I got to tell you, man, I had Liz Truss on here on Friday, and yes, I did get to bring up Yes Minister. Ladies and gentlemen, as always, you have my permission for those.